Vayu Vakshastha Dhapparam They must undergo such severe types of austerity in order to become purified from material contamination. Punch a top hour first of five kinds of steam processes. One is enjoined to sit within a circle of fire with flames blazing from four sides and sun blazing directed overhead. This is one kind of panchatapa recommended for austerity. Similarly, in the rainy season, one is enjoined to expose oneself to torrents of rain and winter to sit in cold water up the neck. As far as bedding is concerned, the ascetic should be content with simply lying on the floor. The purpose for undergoing such severe austerities is to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is explained in the next verse. In the Tapova, Maharaj Prithu sometimes ate the trunks and roots of reed trees. And sometimes he ate fruit and dried leaves, and some ways he drank more water. Finally, he lived simply by breathing air. Following the principles of forest living in the footsteps of great sages and Munis, Prithu Maharaj accepted five kinds of heating processes during the summer season, exposing himself to torrents of rain in the winter, rainy season, and in the winter, stood in water up to his neck. He also used to simply lie down on the floor to sleep. So these are typical activities of the vanaprastha. If one looks in the Smriti Shastras and other places of Bhagavatam, we'll see that this is the actual conduct of a vanaprastha. And Prithu Maharaj followed these according to scripture. We'll see that Bharat Maharaj also followed similarly, went to the forest and ate roots and fruits, etc. The vanaprastha life is concentrated upon tapas, or austerities. So this is what we see described here. Of course, we know from Rupa Goswami that this vairagya is not an anga bhakti, and it can act unfavorably for bhakti also. So in other words, detachment is okay, but if carried to extremes, it also is a problem for bhakti, it interrupts bhakti. And the reason given is the heart becomes dry. Now, in bhakti, the heart should become wet, or it should melt, ardra, which means that by the process of bhakti, gradually one develops a very soft feeling and nice feeling for Krishna. And one becomes very attracted to Krishna. If one does austerities and all such things, then one becomes more indifferent to Krishna. The heart does not melt. It dries up instead. So in other words, the danger of austerities, etc., can lead to an indifference to Krishna. One may be, of course, interested in liberation or in cities, but one does not have much attraction for the Supreme Lord. So that is why bhakti, in bhakti, the process of vairagya, etc., is not an anga. Of course, Rupa Goswami says, in the beginning, it can be a little favorable. So in other words, the qualification for bhakti is we're not overwhelmed by enjoying in the material world. We have some detachment. But it is not a major item of practice. But at the same time, have uncontrolled senses is not favorable for bhakti. So in some sense there is some sort of vairagya. So this is called yukta vairagya, not phagu vairagya. So yukta vairagya means engagement of the senses, but not for one's enjoyment. So how do we engage the senses? For Krishna. And phagu vairagya means we give up attachment to all objects, thinking they're all maya. So we don't use them for anything. So we try to stop the senses. We try to stop our sense of hunger, eating, and seeing, and thinking, and whatever. We try to stop all of that because it's all maya. So the Vaishnava process is not to do that, but rather to engage the mind, the intelligence, the senses, and the body in such a way that we please Krishna. Then these actions are not a cause of bondage. They are a cause of destroying all bondage. and simultaneously developing her attraction to the Supreme Lord. So, in the Varnashram system we see here, there's a concentration on getting your enjoyment in the material world. Then there's the opposite. Give up all the enjoyment in the material world. Of course, this is necessary if one wants to get liberated from the material world. Definitely we have to become fully detached. So this is one step in that process. In bhakti, however, we don't want liberation. We want to develop more and more attraction for the Supreme Lord. So we engage in the practice of devotional service, like hearing and chanting. These are the main items. In the process of doing that, because we're offering everything to the Lord, we don't accept anything for ourselves. So therefore, we become detached. So this is the natural process of detachment. By developing attraction for Krishna, we have less attachment for our own enjoyment. Two things are opposite. We try to give enjoyment to Krishna, then we can't say, I want to enjoy it for myself. So the more we give Krishna enjoyment, the less we enjoy it for ourselves. So this is the natural way of developing detachment. The other way is to restrict the eating process, restrict the seeing process, restrict everything. So here we see that in the Vanaprastha, he has to restrict everything. So he's eating raw roots and fruits from the forest and doesn't cook his food. So this means the things don't taste so good. No salt, nothing, no spices, no ghee. He's just eating raw foods. There are some people that eat raw foods, vegetarians, they eat raw foods. So something like that, and no spices, nothing. So in other words, the eating is very restricted. And not only he restricts the eating that way, but also in sense of time-wise. He doesn't eat all the time. He's restricted in his eating, so he doesn't eat all the time. And in fact, here it says gradually withdrew, and then he stopped breathing even. He stopped drinking water for weeks on end, and then stopped breathing. So all of the senses become restricted. The idea, of course, of fasting is that by fasting you weaken the senses, other senses. So your senses don't operate strongly anymore after you fasted. So therefore you don't want to look at things, you don't want to hear things, you don't want to taste things, you don't want to do things. So it's a way of weakening the senses, sense activities, by the fasting process. So this is a rather austere way of doing this. But it was practiced in all of those days. It was recommended for the Vanaprastha to do this in order to give up his great attachment to material life. And then, of course, restricting water even, restricting air also. And then he did the, not only did that, then he actually increased the austerity of the sense by putting fires around himself in the summer and standing up to his neck in water in the wintertime, cold water. Obviously, this is somewhere like the Himalayas, so the water must be very cold in the wintertime. And he simply stands in the water. So this is giving torture to the body, more or less. We're afflicting it by heat, extreme heat and extreme cold, exposing it to all the material elements. What does this do? The idea is detachment from the material body. Once you become detached from the material body. We find this in, of course, not only in India, we'll find other religions also. The Christians also have this idea of become detached from the body and therefore do austerities and fast and wear clothing that prickles in it. You get prickled, so you get tortured, whatever. So idea of bodily discomfort. So this is practiced not only by the Vanaprastas, we'll see, but the yogis do this. If you go to the Kumbh Mela, then you'll see some the Nagababas there. They got fires all around them, and they got a fire on their head, a pot of fire, and ashes, and some fire on their head, and they're sitting there like this. So this is the idea of five fires. You have fires all around you and fire in your head, and you tolerate the heat. So such is the austerities that are done. Simply to get detachment from the body, stopping the senses from acting, because is all cause of bondage. So this is part of the system, varnashram system. When the kshatriya gets older, you should do this, or the brahmin also can do this, and even the vaishya could do this. Such thing. But of course, we see that it doesn't normally happen like this, and probably in the last 2,000 years, generally no one's been doing this. So this is more reserved for the yogis and stuff, persons like that, rather than vanaprasthas, common vanaprasthas. So it's not so practical, as Prabhupada points out, in the modern age, it's not very practical to do this type of activity. And of course, Rupa Goswami doesn't recommend such extreme austerities anyway. So the austerities of the Vaishnava are things like Ekadasi and fasting on the purest days of the Lord. Those are the austerities of the Vaishnava. So those are actually ways in which one can respect the Lord. So the fasting is a respect for the Lord on his appearance day. So therefore, it is considered part of bhakti. So that is actually a limb of bhakti. It is a type of bhakti. It is not just doing austerities. Here, this is austerities for austerity's sake. But the devotee does the austerity for the pleasure of the Lord. So that is what Akadasi is. Akadasi is called Hari Vasara, or the day of Hari. So it's a day in which you please Vishnu and Krishna. So how do we please them? We do less of the eating process and more of the glorification process. We praise the Lord, we kirtan and whatever. So in other words, it's not so much the restricting we're concentrating on, but we're actually engaging ourselves in Krishna's service. So this is the austerity of the Vaishnava. We see in the first 10 angas of bhakti, one of them actually is to follow vratas, like Ekadasi, etc. Another is to give up attachment to things one's attached to. One should be willing to give up attachment to things one has attachment for. So to that extent, we do our austerities. But the other process is the Yukta Vairagya process, where we actually engage everything in Krishna's service. So this is more practical for us in this particular age. So, of course, the next verse shows that Prithu Maharaj, he did this, but his goal was not liberation. His goal was the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. He did it for the Supreme Lord's pleasure. In that way, he was not doing it with an impersonal intention at all. But we'll see in the material world nowadays, and probably over the last 2,000 years, all these austerities are basically done by yogis or jnanis for liberation. It doesn't mention there what happened to him afterwards in his later life, but I would suspect that he would, but actually doesn't say anything. Probably he did renounce his kingdom and give it. He has to give his kingdom to his sons and pass on, so he would give the kingdom to his sons and go to the forest. Yeah, he was doing it as a child with the intention of making the Lord appear so he could ask him for a kingdom. So it was mixed bhakti.
Too much activity also makes your back
dry. Which means the Atma. We lose interest in Krishna. We become more interested in liberation.
So bhakti is meant for the heart, and philosophy is meant for the mind.
Yeah, well, the devotee engages the mind, the intelligence, everything in Krishna's service. So philosophy is for the intelligence, etc., and the mind. And we have other engagements for the other senses. And it's going to be a sumptuous feast on festival days, but Prabhupada says one must minimize eating in order to progress in spiritual life. How to understand this? Well, it depends on which days we feast. So, on, for instance, on Jamastami, we don't feast. or Purnima we don't feast. We maybe have some Ekadasi meal in the evening or whatever like that. Other festival days, of course, are not fasts, like Govardhan Puja is not a fast. So some of the festival days are not fasts. The appearance days are generally fasts. So Prabhupada mainly concentrated on Jamashtami and Varpurnima as fasting, others do something optional. Though we'll find in the Gaudiya calendar that fasting on all these days, so Mishrima Chaturdasi is a fast, so you don't eat any grains on that day, and then you break the fast the next day with grains. Ramchandra's appearance, they also, you don't eat any grains all day, and then you break the fast with grains the next day. And Varaha and Vamana Dwadasi, of course, you fast on the Ekadasi anyway, so you're taking non-grains. But that's their fasting anyway. So in that way, the fast days are slightly adjusted. That is prescribed in the scriptures. But of course we see in ISKCON generally we don't do that, and we have a feast of grains on those days. Prabhupada really didn't, wasn't too particular on that, to have a full day fast on those days, whatever. What is the purpose?
Ekadasi day fasting is the avoiding grains. But other day you can take grains.
What other times?
What about fasting?
We fast on the Ekadasi for Varaha Ekadasi. So we're not taking grains
so
again.
Some like some Nasman and but you can take grains that time.
Well, the Gaudiya calendar says fast. So it means you shouldn't actually take grains on Ramchandra and Narasimha Dev's day. But as the Prabhupada really didn't enforce those things, and they had feasts those days. I think one reason, of course, is that people come and then you're just giving a little Ekadasi food afterwards. Or all these times they may not come anymore. So better just feed them some feast, you know, have them go, otherwise they may not come.
What about the practicing devotees? Series of practicing?
They can if they want.
And even in fasting on Ekadasi, even in quality and quality, sometimes Ekadasi is just like a big feast or not late. They make a big feast. Quality and quality. They eat less meat more. They are very unpleasant.
Well, obviously, Ekadasi is they're not supposed to overeat, obviously, whatever the case.
Ekadasi is budget is more.
Huh?
Ekadasi budget is more than.
Oh, I see. People eat more. Anxiety.
The day before the Ekadasi, the night we eat
and eat more.
Living in the temple is living in the Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
How will you take my grahastha cannot live in the temple?
Well, you can have a temple in your house. Offer your food to Krishna, etc. And then you become purified. What did he do? Oh, I mean his luxuries. He was obviously he was a wealthy person. Yeah, so he had servants and this and that and whatever. So of course, and then he got criticized. well, then that was an offense also, because actually he wasn't really attached to those things. So there's something in the case of Prithu Maharaj. I'm going to say Prithu Maharaj is the king, and look, he's enjoying like anything. Why? He should be a devotee. He should renounce all that differently. But he didn't. He was obviously there. Even the Pandavas had a kingdom, they had gold, everything gold and everything, and whatever. So why weren't they more detached if they were devotees? They were playing a role there. I suppose we could say Pundarika, and he was also playing a role as a rich Vaishya or something like that. Yeah, he didn't put much emphasis on Chakra Master. I think that's the idea, that too much austerity also is, you know, dries up the heart or whatever.
Also, you find Chaitanya Lila, most of the fastings are eating fastings.
Well, Utsav means feast. Festival ultimately means a feast. So it's any festival, you have to have your rice. Or Bengal anyway. So Ekadasi does not mean feast in one sense. You have to wait for the next day and have your meal of rice. Oh, I don't know, doesn't really mention that too much. I would think Ambarish would be a better example of that, actually. It doesn't describe here how Archana, you did the Archana in detail. It does describe how Ambarish did, but then Ambarish is taken as an example of doing all the processes. But I would think all the kings actually would be engaged in Archana. But he's taken as an example of more or less predominantly doing Archana. So within his kingdom, he must have prominently done deity worship, though it's not mentioned particularly.
Well, even the story of Pundarika, he said that though he was enjoying the shuri, the swim, pan and other things, once he heard the name of the Lord, he was said to be in ecstasy.
Yeah, so he wasn't attached to any of that stuff. It was just external.
Thank you.